this committee. I just want to say to all of you that I'm happy to have you here today, and we're going to try to be as timely as we can. I do have present with me this morning Senator Johnny Ellis, who serves on this committee. Senator Egan will not be able to join us, and Senator Senator Fred Dice, and I think he's coming. He hasn't said he would not come. And the other members are going to be late, coming in at about 10 o'clock. But we're going to go on and get started with what we have, because we don't have to take any votes or anything. Can't do that out of session. You have the agenda in front of you. We have some invited guests that we member people to come and speak. And I just want to just say briefly, we're here because of Senate Bill 5, the Denali Kid Care Bill. And you do know that that bill was heard last session, actually made it to the floor and didn't have the votes to get it out of there. So the bill is still live and is in rules. And the reason I'm having the meeting is just to inform the public of the dilemma that we are in for this particular bill and try to come up with some solutions that we can work out so that when Senate Bill 5 gets over to the House, and if it makes it through that and to the governor's desk, that we'll have something that will be acceptable for him. It does not mean that I want to change the focus of my bill, but there might be some things that we want to go along and do some legislation separate from the bill itself. The bill is just flat out to increase from 175% above the poverty level to 200%. And that's not asking for very much, because in 1997, when this bill first passed, it was at 200% at that time. And then in 2003, Governor Murkowski lowered it to 175%. It eroded to 151%. We did have another bill asking for 200%, and the only way I could get the bill through at that time was to accept 175%. It had support from Republicans and Democrats. Almost everyone voted for the bill, and here we are again now trying to come back to that 200% level. That puts us at the bottom of the list of states. I think we're number 47 for children health care, which means that most of the states, more than 50% of the states, have at least 250% above poverty level, and some funded fully. A state as wealthy as we are, I see no reason why we should not be able to do that also. So for that reason, this is a priority of mine. It's the number one priority of mine to pass this bill so that we might be able to bring on approximately 1,300 children, 300 or less, pregnant women. We will go by the schedule or agenda that you have, and the first thing that we have on the agenda is for the administration to come forward and just give an overview of the Denali Kid Care.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm John Sherwood with the Department of Health and Social Services. I'm going to talk briefly about the kind of the program side of Denali Kid Care, and then Alona Johnson is going to talk about the actual operation of the Denali Kid Care office. I get the dry technical stuff. She gets the fun stuff. So, Denali Kid Care, or sometimes DKC, provides health care for children and pregnant women in this state, and it does so through the Medicaid program. Denali Kid Care is a part of the Medicaid program. As you mentioned, Madam Chair, it does provide coverage to individuals up to 175% of the poverty level. Unlike many kinds categories of eligibility for Medicare, there is no asset test for this. Generically, the categories included in Denali KidCare are sometimes called poverty level Medicaid because their income standards are tied to the poverty level standards. One of the unique aspects of Denali KidCare is it includes a component. Higher income children without insurance within that group are covered under the state's Medicaid CHIP expansion, the Child Health Insurance Program expansion. States have the option to have a separate program or a Medicaid expansion or a combination. Alaska has chosen to have a Medicaid expansion. The significance of CHIP is it does come with enhanced funding. The match rate is 65% of federal as opposed to currently, it changes, as opposed to about 50% federal, which is where our regular Medicaid match is right now. The program provides a wide range of services for children, primary care, acute care, many kinds of supportive care. Of course, we have under federal law what's called early and periodic screening, diagnosis, and treatment, which basically says if a child is diagnosed with a condition that can be treated under Medicaid, the state has to provide that treatment for those Medicaid-eligible children. So it's a wide range of health support for the children, and then, of course, for pregnant women, covers all their pregnancy services and generally a wide range of the other services that are available to adults under the Medicaid program. And with that, I'm going to take it over to Alona to tell you about how the Denali KidCare office works.
Yes. Before you start, Alona, let me say one thing that I knew when I started off. We would like for all of you to turn your cell phones off if you have them here. And there are some people that's already online was thinking that they could testify, but we're taking inviting people this morning, and public testimony will begin today at 1:30. For those of you that think that you could do it this morning, 1:30 for the public. And at noon, of course, we have the rally. I'll turn it back to you now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Ilona Johnson. I'm an Eligibility Office Manager 1. I have the pleasure of managing the Denali KidCare Office for the Division of Public Assistance. I have under me 23 eligibility technicians, two eligibility lead workers, which are eligibility technicians 3. Also, I have a supervisor, a clerical supervisor, plus 10 clerical staff. I have office assistants 1, which is an entry-level clerical position. I also have office assistants 2, and they also are tasked with doing pregnant women Medicaid. So we have a full staff. We have a journey level experience in our staff. We are currently changing a PCN eligibility technician 4, which is a supervisor, and that will be added to Denali KidCare. In all that, I want to say that our staff is very experienced in this program. We have the pleasure of seeing children covered with Medicaid or Denali KidCare. We have the pleasure of parents coming back to us saying thank you for this program many, many times. It's very rewarding. Our eligibility techs are, we strictly determine eligibility. We don't do anything other than eligibility, which is based on state and federal guidelines and law. Primarily, we look at income and household composition. I'm not sure what else I can tell you other than that we currently serve 23,000 families, and of course more individual clients. This is a family group. There are statistics available online as to how many. I know there are quite a few. I also know that we're quite busy. I can tell you that our turnaround time for an application is now within 10 days. Actually, for applications, it's now 8 days. It's 10 days for the entire office. We're very proud of that accomplishment. Pregnant women Medicaid, because we do have some additional help with the office assistance too, our work within 5 days. They are our priority. The other thing that I would like to share is that when we have someone come in, and quite often they do, that has a child with an emergency medical condition, we absolutely stop everything and we work that application. We are able to send children to Seattle for help. We're very proud of the results of our urgent work. We currently have an eligibility technician that is sitting in the front, where in the lobby area, so that anyone coming in, anyone from Anchorage, we of course serve the entire state, but if you in Anchorage and you have an emergency, or you come in and you have your application and your application is complete, your income is attached, we will work it right then as you walk into the office. It's a new process that we're just starting. The state has, division has gone to what we're calling a lean process to, get applications and renewals through faster, more efficiently, and this is part of that process. We have an upfront clerk that we'll look at those applications and route them immediately for assistance. I'm not sure what else I can tell you.
Well, at this point, I appreciate the information that you have given, but I, in my own mind, I'm not really clear exactly how this program is really handled. I've visited your office. And we've done that several times during my time in the legislature, but I don't understand. I want you to tell me the total number of clients you have that's on Denali KidCare. I think a number has been thrown out to me around 10,000. Around 10,000. Is that 10,000 children, including the pregnant women, or do we separate those?
Just to pull off the August data, which I think we provided you some information, over 10,000 children were in the CHIP category.
Yes.
That we could claim the enhanced funding for. There were a little over, let me figure out which piece of paper it's on. There were a little over 40,000 children total in all of the Denali KidCare category.
And that's the Medicaid under 175.
That's Medicaid under 175, children who were determined without the asset test. And there are about 3,100 pregnant women. Now, just a qualifier, Alona's talked about her office. There are always some cases in transfer coming and going different offices. I can't swear that every one of those cases was in her office in the month of August, but they're either coming or going to that office, because we don't, if we have somebody in another caseload and they move, we don't stop and send them to the office first. We put them, we give them we issue them the Medicaid and then move them along to the right office after the fact. So those are the basic numbers. Within that 40,000, that 10,000 we alluded to is included in that number. But about three quarters of the children fall into the regular Medicaid, and one quarter get the enhanced CHIP funding. And then there's, you know, there's about, in the month of August, there was about 35,000 other children in other kinds of Medicaid categories throughout the state.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a waiting list?
A waiting list for
people that might qualify for the enhanced program, but at the 175?
No. Madam Chair, we, as a Medicaid expansion, it's an entitlement. So while there may be some, some applications in process, we work them as fast as we can, and they get the benefits immediately. There are states that have separate CHIP programs that aren't Medicaid expansions. They are allowed to have waiting lists. And some of the states do have waiting lists or limit enrollment, cutoff enrollment at a certain point in time in the year if they meet their target numbers. But Alaska does not. So.
And the other clarification that I would need, I was thinking everything statewide end up at this office in Anchorage?
Madam Chair, that would be correct. As far as the now for children.
Yes, I'm talking about our program, the Now Kid Care.
Yes, mm-hmm. In our office.
Yes. Hey, Johnny, I didn't give you the opportunity to make a statement, but you have any questions that you want to ask or any comments to be made?
Thank you.
You're quite welcome. You see on the schedule we're going to have a question and answers later on in the day. And so we will get around to that, but I think we'll just start now with our public testimony that we're going to have, invited testimony. Thank you very much. Karen Perdue?
I'm Ilona Farr.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed the name on the Iona Farr. Would you come forward? You're there. Okay. And we will go by that list.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Ilona Farr. I grew up here in Alaska and have been back practicing in Alaska for 25 years now. And I want to thank both of you for your service to the state of Alaska. I really appreciate what you do in the state legislature. And thank you for allowing me to testify today. I think your hearts are in the right place with this bill, but I must disagree with it, and there's a couple of different reasons I do that. So I'm going to run through that, and I'm going to propose a couple of different solutions that I think are better for this issue. Basically, I disagree with taking health dollars away from senior citizens on Medicare because that's how this Medicaid expansion is being funded through ACA. They're taking $500 billion away from Medicare and using it to increase Medicaid. And I have real problems with us taking dollars away from senior citizens that are at the end of their life, has no potential for earning, and giving it to young people that do have a potential for employment. The second thing is physicians take the Hippocratic Oath, which prevents us from giving a woman abortive remedy, and our tax dollars should not pay for any procedure that kills the future children of Alaska. And that has to do with Medicaid. Also, the income limits that you guys are proposing are extremely high, okay? For a family of five, the 2011 guidelines is more than I made in my first 19 years of practicing medicine. You know, and if I can do it, then I know other people can do it too. So I have real trouble with increasing it to this limit unless we make a decision that we're going to cover all children and all people in the state of Alaska. I see people in my practice that are deliberately being underemployed or becoming low income to qualify for Medicaid and gaming the system, and that's one of the things that made me choose to opt out of the system, and I can give you stories about that, but it is a real problem up here where we have people flying up here from other states to take advantage of Medicaid and then leaving the state after they're done getting their services. Right now, national study that was done showed the estimated cost of private insurance is $15,000 for a family. And this is going to increase between 25 and 85% more over the next few years as ACA is instituted. And part of this is because the more mandates that you have, the higher the cost of insurance. So we're actually going to see a lot more people that are not going to be able to afford insurance, and that's why we need to come up with some solutions, not only for this 175 to 200%, but for a wider variety of Alaskans. And that's why I think we need to look at solutions that will help more people rather than just a select few individuals. I'm also concerned about the sustainability of this, because with our declining oil revenues in the state of Alaska, which is where most of our tax dollars come from, we're not going to have the money to be able to sustain this program, and I would prefer a program that's much more sustainable and will cover a lot more individuals. Right now, our budget for Medicaid and Medicaid-related services is over $1.7 billion, and this is close to the total annual budget of a lot of states and the rest of the United States. The other thing is this ACA and stimulus bill creates entities that are producing guidelines that will be restricting care for individuals. And one of the pet peeves that I have is the mammograms under the age of 50 will not be permitted, and 50% of my breast cancer patients were diagnosed under the age of 50. Therefore, I have real trouble participating in programs like Medicare and Medicaid that are going to hold me to these guidelines. They're going to potentially harm my patients. For instance, PSA testing, my last three men were all under the age of 50 that were diagnosed by prostate cancer. And so I think this needs to be an individual decision between physicians and patients and not based on federal guidelines, because there's a lot of us that feel that we're moral and ethical and do not agree with these guidelines, and you're putting us with these audits and everything else in a very difficult position. One of my ideas is to have these middle-income women and children put their PFDs directly in a health savings account, and they'd have to be put directly into the health savings account so they wouldn't be taxed. And then what you could do is use a Visa-like system, and the reason why I'm saying that is Visa has much less fraud than Medicare and Medicaid does. And so what you want to look at how private insurance companies reduce fraud and abuse and use that system, use Visa and other systems to help reduce the fraud and abuse that could potentially occur as a result of any type of federal program.
Dr. Parr?
Yes.
If you completed your testimony, are you at the point now where you're talking about solutions other than the Denali KidCare increasing to 200%?
Yes.
What I would like for you to do to give that to me in writing, and we don't have time for you to go through that. We want testimony, you know, and I have no problem with you stating that you think there's a better way. I'm willing to look at that. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to share it with my committee, but we don't have the time to go through that today. So if you have it in writing, you may give it to us, and if you don't, you can get it to us later on. And if you have any closing statements, I need to move on to the next person to speak.
Okay, health savings accounts reduce the outpatient costs in Indiana 67%. I think we need to look at different programs, because I think this program, A, the income guidelines are way too high on this, and we need to look at programs that will cover a lot more people rather than just a few isolated individuals that this increase from 175 to 200, because I do not think it is sustainable. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Okay, I got mixed up when I said Iona, because we had another Iona, and I said, oh, she's already spoke. But now I'll go to Karen Perdue. And I want to say while you're coming up that we are interested only in, there's a Medicaid program, and I know Denali KidCare is a part of it, but we are talking about only Denali KidCare. We're not talking about the overall Medicaid budget, how many people are in it, and that. So make your testimony be limited to the topic that we have, and the bill is Senate Bill 5, Denali KidCare increase.
Thank you, Senator.
You're welcome.
My name is Karen Perdue. I'm the CEO and President of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. We represent 28 Alaska hospitals and nursing homes in all over Alaska, big and little. My background includes a long history with Denali KidCare. I was the Commissioner of Health and Social Services and also the Deputy Commissioner in charge of Medicaid for a long period of time, and watched the evolution of our coverage in the state of pregnant women and children from what we would call the categorically eligible. In other words, the parents needed to be really stuck in poverty and on what we used to call welfare for their children to get health care, to the evolution of this concept of the SCHIP program, which is really about working parents and allowing them to access coverage just for their children, They may get employment, they may get coverage through their employer for their own care, but often don't have the access to dependent coverage. So this was a large national debate. It occurred almost a decade ago. It was a bipartisan debate that was led by Senator Orrin Hatch and Senator Ted Kennedy. And it established the S-CHIP program with really the funds from the tobacco settlement. That was the major impetus to get the S-CHIP program started. Alaska did adopt on a bipartisan measure the S-CHIP program, and I think the Denali, which we call Denali Kid Care, and I think Denali Kid Care enjoys wide support, not only among legislators, but also families, providers. Last time I looked, there were 6,000 medical providers enrolled in Medicaid in the state, and every single hospital and nursing home is enrolled in Medicaid in Alaska. So I think that while some providers choose to limit what they do with regard to their Medicaid population, I think family practice in general actively uses Medicaid. I know our hospitals actively use Medicaid. I did want to just talk a little bit about, if you would indulge me, about the S-CHIP program and how it fits into the children's coverage, if you wouldn't mind. So Medicaid is a children's program. I think there's a misperception out there that it only covers seniors and disabled people. But I think always, from the very beginning, it has been an active children's program. In fact, if you look at the number of people on Medicaid today in Alaska, at least half of them are children. So while the seniors and disabled people really need the help, and they're very expensive per unit of service because they need the help, they can't get their insurance in other ways often. Well, seniors work with the Medicare program, but the disabled individuals really need that help. Children, a good percentage of who Medicaid covers is children. And the children are extremely cheap when you compare them to the needs of seniors and the disabled. And the Division of Legislative Finance actually ran a sheet last year that I have a copy of. I'm just going to give you a few factoids from that. Last year, according to this sheet, 60,000 children under age 21 received physician services from Medicaid, $47 million, at the cost of $788 per recipient. $788. Now, the average for children's cost per unit of service was brought up by the inpatient hospital care because this is primarily neonatal children, babies that are born that are premature and are in the neonatal unit. And so that basically was about 8,600 children, including Denali Kid Care kids, and they were about $11,000 per child. But some children are more than $1 million. So my point here, too, is that while parents can cover the $788, if that's all that's wrong with their children in 1 year or they're getting preventative care, if their child is born with an anomaly or if something happens, God forbid, trauma-wise to their child, it can bankrupt a family. And so I think that it's really an insurance program, and I think that was the original philosophy why it was founded is actually an insurance program, because kids are generally cheap, and usually families can keep up with this preventative care, especially at these higher income levels. But if that horrible thing happens, it's there. It's there for them. The S-CHIP program, the Denali Kid Care program that we have, is a model in the nation. When it was set up as a very efficient government service, probably one of our more efficient government services. You do not stand in a line. You do not get put on hold. You can work over the Internet to get your help. I think it's even gotten better over the years, and as a matter of fact, I think that the state has received very good awards for their service. So it's really what government, if you're going to have a government program, this is probably what we need to have. And I think we need to model future future things on this kind of the lean approach that they described, the 5 and the 10-day turnaround. I think that the other thing that we have done very well in this state because of some unique characteristics of our population is we have minimized our state investment in this area. We have about 60% overall federal claim for Medicaid, but our Denali KidCare is quite a bit higher than that, maybe even in the 70s, I'm not totally sure. So that means every dollar that's spent, 70 cents comes from the federal government, 30 cents comes from the state government. And I think that's because the tribal children that are covered have come into the system and it's integrated. There's no separation. That's a model in our country. And so our Indian, our Native American children are getting the care that they are entitled to by the federal government. They're using Denali KidCare, but the federal government is paying the whole bill. So we're really getting a very efficient system in that regard. I want to say that I know that many states are cutting back on Medicaid. We read about this every single day, all the challenges that states are having, the federal government is having with the budgets and entitlements, and this is, of course, an entitlement. And it's a very difficult time right now, not only for health providers, but for people planning their senior retirement and that kind of thing. There's lots of questions on the table. But I think if you look very, very closely at each state and what they're doing, there is no state, or virtually no state, that is cutting children's health care. They may be cutting provider rates. They may be changing utilization, but they're not cutting off children. That is my bold assumption. I could be proved wrong, but I really do not believe that that is where most states are going, even in the most difficult of financial times. Ashland has supported the Denali KidCare expansion for a decade since the beginning. Hospitals and nursing homes are not going to get most of the benefit as a provider group. You know, sometimes people say providers are self-centered in terms of, well, they just want more coverage because that means more paying people come through the door, and that is certainly true. But mostly, these kids are not going to be in hospitals. The deliveries might be in hospitals, but for the most part, babies are going home, they're well, and they're getting preventative services. So we really see this as part of our mission to support the overall health of the state of Alaska. I just want to conclude by saying that I think this is a very difficult time for healthcare. We all know the super committee is working. We all know that there are many, many proposals on the table to change healthcare and how we finance it in this country. There are some reasons for us in the state to decide on this matter for once and all this year. There are possibly times when it would be advantageous to Alaska to have this expansion and these dollars, if we're going to go ahead and spend them in our base, as we look at moving to more block granting approaches, or we look at approaches whereby they're looking at blending our match rate, and so our match rate would be higher with these populations in there. I really think that this is probably our major window for making this kind of decision. We need to move on and make this decision in the affirmative. I just want to remind you that when Denali KidCare first passed, it was almost entirely bipartisan. I think there were very few people in the House and Senate that voted against it. When it passed prior to being vetoed, my records show that the Senate passed at 15-4 and the House 37-3. So we know that people out there want this program. We know it's efficient. We know it's targeted. If there could be a way, a couple of suggestions. If there could be a way to look at cost sharing, and we looked at this a number of years ago and there were limited ways to do that, that probably would be very welcome. And I think parents at this level would be interested in cost sharing. I think if the rules allow that, I think the department should look into that. And another idea might be on the waiting list concept. You know, perhaps it is time to establish a waiting list so that we know what the true need is, so that individuals and families who come and apply, because always there's somebody outside the level. If you set a level, there's always one person that's $1 over. But if we set up a waiting list of who would be eligible between 175 and 200%, we would know what the profile of these families are. We would know if they were voluntarily could provide that information. We would know what kind of health needs their children have. We would know what kind of decision we're making. So those are two suggestions that I would have for you, Senator, and I really much appreciate your an opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the testimony. Sarah Weber, may come forward, please.
Got an extra with me today.
We're happy to have her.
Yes, this is my daughter, Faye.
Yes.
Well, my name is Sarah. My husband and I are both born and raised Alaskans. We have four children. I have to add that big disclaimer. We are a working family. We have been on Denali Kid Care for mostly just, you know, preventative care and prenatal care as a supplement to our primary health insurance through my husband's employer. Unfortunately, to insure all of our children, it would cost almost 30% of our take-home pay with a $5,000 deductible per person. So it's almost unachievable for us to just insure my husband and myself. I have a daughter who's almost 13. I used it, you know, I was a teen mom with her. It was terrific. My dad was going through brain cancer treatment and was on Medicaid himself, so, you know, I had no major medical opportunities. And with my second and third children, they were all born perfectly healthy babies and never really expected to use it for anything other than dental, vision, and all of those normal well baby visits. They had some ER visits for splitting their faces open like little boys do. But this little one, Faye, she was born October 27, 2010, seemingly healthy baby, and 6 months ago she was diagnosed with cancer. And it was probably one of the most intense moments in my family's lives. You know, we immediately were worried about what to do. The type of cancer she has is neuroblastoma. It's very rare. The state of Alaska sees it about two cases of it a year, and they don't treat it here, especially in infants. We were, you know, because we had Denali Kid Care, treatment never stopped. It just kept on going. We were able to, you know, within 36 hours of her diagnosis, be life-flighted to Portland, Oregon, where she received care from a team of specialists that, you know, work specifically with this type of cancer. After her treatment roadmap was set up, thankfully a month later, we were able to come home, and she's been able to receive 6 out of her 8 chemotherapy treatments here at Providence Hospital, and that's been terrific. She, you know, and all for the most part looks like a healthy baby, but her latest treatment of chemotherapy was this Tuesday. Her monthly medical needs are, on average, about 3 times my family's earnings. Without having coverage like this, we would have been devastated. Her care would have been delayed, which, you know, this is care that no doubt saved her life. When she was diagnosed, she was stage 4, did not have a lot of time to wait to get treatment. And she's enjoying the spotlight. But, you know, we've been advocates for Denali Kid Care because of how much it's helped us mostly for the basic stuff. We never anticipated needing it for catastrophic coverage. And before I got pregnant with her, before I was surprised with this wonderful addition, my family was bounced between $100 and $50 a month from not qualifying. And that's really scary. And I've met families who are $50 over a month and don't qualify. And I know things need to be done to change that, but I do think expanding this coverage right now is at least something in the meantime. You know, when I think about families in similar situations to me that might be that $100 a month over the income limit, gosh, what are they going to do? You know, if you don't have, you can always receive care in a hospital. I know a hospital won't turn you away, but a hospital does not pay the monthly prescriptions that a sick child like this needs. They don't pay for, you know, pain medication. I've got all of these added, added concerns aside from just the hospitalization, because in all honesty, she hasn't spent an extensive amount of time in the hospital. But I think of, you know, hearing the numbers that there are, this could cover 1,900 more children. And I know people put, think of it as, you know, a welfare type system, or kind of lump it with that, which that bothers me. My husband and I work. I work seasonally. He works full time. He's been at the same job for 15 years. He's in position to own the company that he works for within the next few years. And if I wanted to work full time, I couldn't, because this is job here. And I think of how many lives could be saved, I guess, with expanding this coverage. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
I want to recognize Senator Meyer. He just arrived, and we're glad to have you with us. Okay, David, we're going to call you up at this time.
Madam Chair, Senator Ellis and Senator Meyer, my name is David Masuo. I am one of the original Denali KidCare eligibility technicians that started the program back in 1998. And I've basically followed this program. I truly believe that this program is one of the finest programs that Alaska has to offer our children. What she said kind of tears at me a little bit. And the reason it does is because she's not the only case that I've heard. As an eligibility technician, we receive phone calls from parents who are concerned about their children. And we look at as a way of helping the child. We're not concerned about what we look like or what we're going to get out of it. What we want is to see that we can help that child. And it's so very important. A pregnant woman who falls under Denali KidCare is seen right away by a physician. She is cared for through her pregnancy, and then the baby is taken care of at birth for one full year. Now, we all say, well, that's a lot of money. That is nothing compared to a mother who has a baby who has never seen a doctor until the very day that she has the baby. So cost-wise, we are saving thousands of dollars just by having her on Denali KidCare. Children, you're covered up to the age of 19, and then Denali KidCare ends. But by that time, they're ready to go out into the world. with the new change in the insurance programs where parents can carry their children up to the age of 26, that's very helpful. I would like to see no 150 and 200%. I would like to see, regardless if you have insurance or not, you can be on Denali Kid Care at the 200% level, because that means more kids are going to be eligible for Denali Kid Care. I had a lady call me in the first couple of years of my eligibility and said to me, David, I heard about Denali Kid Care. I don't know what's going on with it, but can you explain it to me? And I kind of gave her a few minutes of my time, and I explained her the program. And she says, well, I don't think I qualify because I receive X amount of dollars, and my daughter is having some very serious problems, and I'm completely, basically bankrupt. I'm going to lose my house next. And so I started questioning her about, well, what's your income? Tell me about your income. And she says, well, I'm retired and I only get this amount of money. And I looked at it and I said, ma'am, I hate to tell you this, but you're eligible. You've been eligible. She started crying on the phone. She lived up in Fairbanks, and I wanted to go to Fairbanks and hold on to her because I knew what this was going to do for her and her child. Her child was put on Denali Kid Care immediately. I took care of it, got her on board. The child was sent to a specialist. I don't want to go into what the child had, but I can tell you that the child was sent to a specialist, had to go outside the state of Alaska, and it was about 3 years before she was whole again. She came back to Alaska. She got married and had a baby, and the baby was on Denali Kid Care. And I was so happy. And the mother called me up and told me about that and said, you know, David, if it wasn't for you, we don't know where we'd be right now. That's the kind of a job that I had. And, you know, it's a state job. And people get these state jobs and, you know, they change tires or whatever and they don't do anything that makes them feel good. I used to go home every night feeling, boy, do I feel good. I want to get back to work tomorrow. I worked for Ilona. But I started the program when it first started. And I remember how it was. I would love to see the program go to 250 to get more kids on, because it doesn't cost that much to care for a child that we are seeing constantly in doctor's offices. It costs us a heck of a lot more when we have to send that child to the emergency room because the child has a cold. Do you have any questions that you'd like to ask me? Remember now, I don't walk to the state anymore, so I can say whatever I want to say.
Any questions for David? We want to thank you for your testimony, David. There's going to be a question and answer period later on, but we won't take any questions at this time, I think.
Okay. And I thank you, and keep pushing. I want to see it back. I'd like to see it at 250.
All right. Thank you. I also like to say at this time that Rep. Tuck is online listening to us, and also Representative Gutenberg is also listening in. Can you hear us well?
I hear you guys fine.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for being there. The next person is going to be online. What do we have to do to get that? We have someone from Juneau that's going to testify at this time. Walter, are you...
I'm here, Madam Chair. I didn't know that you wanted me to go now. Thank you very much. Senator Davis, other committee members, my name is Walter Majoris. I am and have been for the last 9 years the executive director of Juno Youth Services, and we provide mental health and substance abuse services to children and youth. We serve kids ages 3 to 21. We offer a lot of different kinds of services, including an emergency shelter, outpatient services, school-based services, and several different residential programs. Many of the youth that we work with have been, you know, victims of significant child abuse and other forms of trauma, and many of them are involved in state custody, either through the Office of Children's Services and the Division of Juvenile Justice, and to be honest, many of them have very, you know, damaged lives and need a lot of support services to get things back on track. We serve over 500 youth and families a year, and these kids are not just from Juneau and Southeast Alaska, but particularly in our residential programs, these are kids that come from all over the state of Alaska. We currently, and in the past, are strong supporters of SB 5, increasing the eligibility for Denali Kid Care from 175 to 200%, which, you know, as all of us know, is the level that was established when the program was first created in 1997, you know, so we just want to get back to where the program was when it was established in our state. And I know, you know, it's common knowledge that we are one of only four states in the country with an eligibility level that's below 200%. And that half the states, you know, 25 states, have set that bar at 250% or higher. This is an increase that's badly needed in our state. The latest data that I've read, you know, says that there are over 24,000 uninsured children in Alaska, and raising the eligibility from 175 to 200% would allow for 1,300 of these uninsured youth to receive coverage. I guess the most important point that I want to make is that Denali Kid Care is one of the main ways that children and youth with mental health and substance abuse issues, it's one of the main ways that they access services. For our agency, and we've tracked this information for a long, long time, and so the data is good, over 83% of the children and youth who receive mental health and substance abuse services at Juno Youth Services are funded through Denali Kid Care and other forms of Medicaid. We also have a wait list for services. And we could reduce this wait list and serve more children and youth if Denali Kid Care threshold was raised to 200% of poverty. But the important message for the committee to hear is this is the way the kids in the state of Alaska access, you know, mental health and substance abuse services. It's the primary way. And also the last point that I'd like to make is that just the importance of early intervention. You know, the earlier that we can provide these services to youth, and at the younger the age, you know, the greater the chance that we're going to avoid, you know, longer term, you know, problems and more intensive care. You know, the research has shown that children without health care coverage are four times more likely to use expensive emergency room care. So we want to provide the more efficient, you know, less intensive community-based services and more prevention and early intervention services so kids don't need these high-end services, you know, later on. Denali Kid Care also makes sense financially. It was mentioned in prior testimony that approximately 70% of the cost is paid through federal Medicaid matching funds. So it just makes sense on so many different levels. And the last thing that I would like to say is to thank you, Senator Davis, and thank the committee for taking the leadership on continuing to take the leadership on this issue. And as again, prior testimony has indicated, you know, healthcare is not a very, you know, popular topic right now. There's a lot of people that are out to cut healthcare coverage, but we also need to invest in our children and we need to invest in the future. And what better way than this moderate, you know, increase in the eligibility for Denali Kid Care? So thank you so much for your continued leadership, and we will support you in any way that we can.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll take one other, and then we're going to take a break. United Way, we have June Sobinski testifying at this time. United Way.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. Again, my name for the record is June Sobinski. I'm Vice President for Community Action at United Way of Anchorage. United Way of Anchorage has several goals, and the potential passage of this increase in eligibility for Denali Kid Care would certainly contribute to every single one of those goals. The first is that children enter school ready, that they go on to graduate from high school, college, and career ready. Another goal is that our families are financially stable, and we have an additional goal that individuals in Anchorage have access to health care. So again, United Way of Anchorage supports this increase in eligibility for Denali Kid Care from 175 to 200% of the federal poverty level. Last year, of the 50 or so agencies that United Way of Anchorage works with here in this city, 100% of them agreed to collaborate to lobby on behalf of passage of this bill. I must say, it's not an everyday event where they agree to lobby for one thing together and pool resources to do so. But they did. And I think that says something, because we have not only providers of services for early childhood or young people, some of these agencies support seniors, many support families, youth providers. It's all across the spectrum, those serving disabled, and the list goes on. And we also know that last year the legislature overwhelmingly passed this legislation, and we ask that it happen again. As Senator Davis mentioned, we know that Denali Kid Care currently serves almost 8,000 children, and this could add another 1,300. And yes, while that might be a select few, that is an incremental improvement, and we're here to lobby on behalf of that. I myself am a mother. And many of you are mothers, some of you are fathers. For a brief time when my husband and I were transitioning between homes and jobs, my son and I were uninsured. I lived with terrible anxiety during that time because I knew that any serious accident or unexpected illness could have been our complete financial ruin. I cannot imagine living with that sustained level of anxiety, and I cannot imagine not responding to the health needs of my child. And yet, this is exactly what we have imposed on 1,300 children and their families in failing to pass this last year. So I'm speaking up on behalf of those 1,300 children who are not in a position to speak for themselves. And those of us who are advocates for those individuals, those of us who serve them, must speak up, and so should others. One thing that has not been mentioned yet today is that, you know, the issue that last year terminated the possibility of health insurance for these children was the question of abortion. And I would like to suggest that let us engage this question of abortion, but apart from this bill, which is about the health of children we already have. Let us find the appropriate context in which to grapple with that question. Let us hold harmless these 1,300 children and these up to 300 pregnant women. So we ask the members of the legislature to pass this legislation to increase the eligibility, and we further ask that the legislation and the administration pursue a solution that will allow it to be enacted. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to take a 10-minute break at this time, in case people need to get some refreshments or go to the bathroom or do anything that you need to do. We'll take this time now. And I want to call up Clover Simon and Misty. Is both of you coming together or separate or what?
I don't think Misty is here unless she's online.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
I'll turn it over to you.
Great, Madam Chair and committee members, thank you. And thank you for your continued leadership on this issue. My name is Clover Simon. I'm a master's level social worker, and I'm here today representing the National Association of Social Workers Alaska chapter. I'm also a current board member. There are over 400 members of the Alaska chapter here in Alaska, and we work all across the state. We provide the majority of the mental health services that are provided in Alaska. We also work in hospitals, social service agencies, home health agencies, courts, schools, the military, and private corporations. Social work, by definition, is a profession that prides itself in standing up for others. And to that end, we are in support of continuing the push to pass an increase in Denali Kid Care to 200% of the federal poverty level. When it comes to Alaska's children, it's time to get back to basics. That means protecting their health and safety, protecting them from harsh economic times, and helping them develop their God-given potential. Alaska shouldn't be at the bottom of the list of states in health and safety of its children. We need to make sure that every woman has prenatal care, that every child has a doctor. Our children, frankly, are our future, and it doesn't get any more basic than increasing Denali Kid Care. So that takes us one step closer to a healthier generation. There are many parents who cannot afford health insurance, and these statistics have been mentioned by other folks that have testified. But basically, uninsured, low-income children are also four times as likely to rely on emergency departments and have no regular source of care. And this extends also to the mental health and behavioral issues that some children face in the state. The delay to seeking care extends to kids who are on the edge of eligibility that would benefit from routine behavioral and mental health screenings. Currently, some of these youth do eventually get covered by Denali Kid Care, but often after they are admitted to residential care for mental or behavioral health issues. These costs are very huge and could be avoided if these kids had access to screening prior to the crisis ensuing in their family. So with that, the NASW continues to support the increase of Denali Kid Care. We have a conference going on right now with social workers across the state. There are over 200 social workers currently down at the Coast Hotel. Unfortunately, they couldn't all be here, and so you can just imagine me multiplied by 200. We're all here in support of Denali Kid Care and hoping that we can move this forward. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. We appreciate you coming. I did have the privilege to attend your part of your meeting this morning on a panel at 7 o'clock this morning. It was well attended, and thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to come. The next person is going to be Pat Luby, who's going to come up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP in Alaska. AARP is in strong support of Senate Bill 5. AARP is an organization, the world's largest organization of grandparents. We're concerned about everyone's grandchildren. Many of our members over age 65 have the luxury of having health security because they're old enough to be on Medicare. We think Alaska's children and pregnant women should have that same health security and enroll as many as possible with any type of health insurance program. We believe a healthy future for Alaska's children is something that all of us should be able to agree on. There's 5,500 Alaskan grandparents raising over 8,200 grandchildren. Many of these people are on Medicare themselves. They have no way to insure those grandchildren unless they can get them onto Denali Kid Care. And it's critical simply for that large number of people who are raising their grandkids to be able to have access to that coverage also. There's one other item I wanted to mention. Dr. Farr, when she testified, talked about how money was taken away under the ACA from Medicare to transfer it into Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program. AARP supported taking $500 million out of the Medicare program. That money was all earmarked for what was called Medicare Advantage. Medicare Advantage doesn't take place in Alaska. None of those policies were sold up here. Medicare Advantage was supported by regular Medicare beneficiaries, and it paid for things like eyeglasses, hearing aids, some preventive health care, but even gym memberships. We did not think that normal, regular Medicare beneficiaries should have to support those advantages for other people simply because they were on the Medicare Advantage program, and we supported taking that away from the federal program. Just wanted to clarify that. But we're in strong support of Senate Bill 5. We think all of Alaska's kids ought to have access to health care. All our pregnant women should have access to health care. And we really encourage you to push this again. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Valerie Davison.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and Senator Ellison, Senator Meyer. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Valerie Davidson. I work at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. I'm the Senior Director of Legal and Intergovernmental Affairs. My Yupik Eskimo names are Nuchagalok and Emeshemagnan. My mother, I'm originally from Bethel. My mother's family is from Guginluk, which is on the coast from Bethel. She's Yupik. My dad's family is Caucasian or white, and they come from Port Orchard, Washington. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium supports Senate Bill 5, and Chairwoman Davis indicated, that Alaska is one of the few states that does not have 200% of the federal poverty level for eligibility. And I guess I just want to underscore for the committee that, you know, Alaska's children, we all love our children wherever we live. And Alaska Native families want what every family wants. We want our children to be healthy. We want them to be happy. We want them to live in safe communities. But all Alaska parents want the same thing, and Alaska's children really deserve the best. We really should be among the best states, not among the worst, not in a state that has resources like ours. And a state that has the resources like ours to be among the worst states is really embarrassing, and we just cannot let that happen. Our children really do deserve the best. We've heard about the tremendous benefit for children and pregnant moms, but I want you to know that for those who are living in rural Alaska, the travel benefit that Denali Kid Care provides really is the difference between basic access to health care that people simply would not be able to have. In rural Alaska, where if you're lucky to live in a hub community like Bethel, not one of the smaller villages surrounding Bethel, when milk is on sale, it's on sale for $9 a gallon. And heating oil is over $6 a gallon, which is the same price as the price of gasoline. A 40-minute plane ride will cost you a $300 round-trip ticket from Pipnuk to Bethel. And if your average village size is about 300 to 350 people. And we're very fortunate that the tribal health system really is, for all intents and purposes, the public health system in much of Alaska. There really is no other state presence in the small communities. It doesn't matter whether you're Alaska Native or not. If you are a person living in that community and you need health care, your local village clinic would be the place that you would go for health care. Whether it was basic health care or emergency health care, it is the only health care that is available. We are fortunate that we have community health aides who are a unique Alaska provider type that can provide a wide range of services. However, many of the services that are covered by Denali Kid Care, including dental services, vision services, higher-skilled behavioral health services, are simply not available in a community with an average size of 300 to 350 people. And those services are available at either sub-regional clinics or at the regional hospital. And most families, whether you're working or not, simply cannot afford a $300 plane ticket to be able to get to that next community, and there are no roads connecting any of those communities, so driving is simply not an option. 25% of Alaska Native children who live in rural communities have dental caries. It means 25% of our kids have untreated cavities. Now that has meant in our state we have been very innovative, simply because we've had to. We started a dental health aid therapy program, a mid-level dental practice, that we train folks here in Alaska, and we have a limited number, about 20, in the state who are now certified in providing care. We have about 200 villages. 20 isn't enough. And so when you live in a community where you can only see a dentist once a year, our kids deserve more than that, that we should be able to have better access to care for all of our children in Alaska, regardless of where they live. As Sarah testified earlier, when her daughter needed to have care that wasn't available in Anchorage, Denali Kid Care paid for the travel to Seattle. Well, what's important for this committee to understand is that for people who live in rural Alaska, it's the dental services, it's the optometry services, it's the behavioral health services for us who live in rural Alaska that make that difference. It's the same as a person who would be in Anchorage needing to go to Seattle because those services aren't available in that local community. One of the other things that is important to remember about the CHIP program is that federal CHIP dollars are allocated by state. And if a state does not use their complete allocation of CHIP funding, then those funds go back to the federal government and are distributed to other states. And at a time when states are ramping up their eligibility and ramping up their children's health insurance programs, if Alaska is a state that doesn't use our federal allocation, then effectively those funds are going to be going to other states, and the state of Alaska will be effectively subsidizing the children's health insurance programs of other states. And I think we don't want to be in a position where the state of Alaska is subsidizing children in other states when we have so many of our own children that are simply not covered and deserve that access to care. One of the things that I learned from the implementation of our dental health aid therapy program was that sometimes, you know, there are a couple of things. One is it's never too late to do the right thing. And, you know, we all learn things. We all make mistakes in life, and we have the opportunity to turn those things around. In our state, I think that when the eligibility got dropped from 200% to 175%, that was a mistake on our part. And the good news is it's not a mistake that we have to continue to repeat. It's not a mistake that we have to continue to perpetuate. We can do the right thing. We can turn that around, and it's never too late. The other thing that I learned, I used to think that sometimes you have to do the right thing, even though it's hard. And what the Dental Health Aid Therapy Program taught me is that sometimes you have to do the right thing because it's hard. Because if we don't, then nobody else will. And we have a tremendous opportunity to make a huge difference for working families in our state who simply cannot afford to have access to health care and access to health coverage for our children. And our families deserve better. And again, in closing, I want to thank the committee for your fine work and for your support and your advocacy of this improvement to make sure that Alaska's children get to be among the best of states, not among the worst. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to tell you what I have in mind to do for the rest of the time. We are moving along much faster than I thought we were going to, and we only have a couple more people to testify. I think there might be some people in the audience that's not on the invited list that might have something to say that I will allow that time because we're not going to come back until 1:30. In the meantime, from 12:30 to 1:30, we have a rally that's going to be out on the street there in the parking lot. But what I also want to say to Sherwood and have them come back up and maybe answer a few questions that we might have, even though we have you listed to do it later on. If you don't mind, I'd like to have that happen. So if that's acceptable, we'll just listen to the other two people that we have invited, and then I'll see if there's anybody in the audience that has a statement to make, and I'll see if my members have questions that they might want to bring forward at that time. Okay, we'll have now Kami Minstock, Mike Stock, Clint Stock. Kimmy, you're there. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for your time and energy this morning. I do have Before I forget, packets for each of you that include written testimony of individuals who weren't able to make it today but wanted to make sure that their testimonies were included in public record.
Thank you.
My name is Kimay McClintock, and I am representing Planned Parenthood today. I've worked there as a field organizer since May 2010. Our affiliate currently represents over 37,000 Alaskan supporters, and in 2009 we served 4,700 unduplicated patients in our five Alaska health centers. At Planned Parenthood, we see the benefits of preventative health care every day. We see that men, women, boys, and girls are able to lead healthier, safer lives when they are able to access preventative care. Many of our patients are uninsured and come to us for their reproductive health care because they can't be seen by a private physician. Our organization is proud to be a resource for those who need us, both for their health care needs and to advocate for better health care access. Today, we are advocating for an increase in Denali Kid Care eligibility to 200% of the federal poverty level in Alaska. Our children are our future, and we need to ensure that they are given every chance to reach their full potential. That means giving pregnant women access to essential prenatal care. That means making sure that every child has a doctor. That means giving children basic preventative care so that they can avoid expensive emergency room visits. In this economy especially, there are still many working families who cannot afford health insurance. By not raising the eligibility level, we are forcing parents to choose between one basic necessity and another. We are tired of seeing Alaska's children fall behind in our country. There are 44 states, other states that provide coverage at 200% or above, and 19 of those states provide coverage at 300% or above. Alaska is one of four states that cover pregnant women and children under 200% of the federal poverty level. Increasing the proportion of pregnancies that are wanted and welcomed by both parents helps reduce child poverty and income disparities, improves overall family well-being, and reduces taxpayer costs. Until we have comprehensive family planning services that are affordable for all women, abortion will continue to be a legal option for women facing an unplanned and unwanted pregnancy. And in Alaska, that right extends to poor women as well. Thank you for your time today and for considering and hearing our testimony.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mary Sullivan.
Good morning. Thank you, Senator Davis, Senator Ellis, and Senator Meyer for inviting me here to testify today. I'm here in lieu of Shelley Hughes, and we are from the Alaska Primary Care Association. Our association represents 25 community health centers that operate 143 clinic sites in rural and urban areas around our state. The APCA strives toward the goal of a statewide healthy population with its mission to promote access to health care for all Alaskans. Because because health insurance coverage is a key component related to health care access, the Alaska Primary Care Association supports Senate Bill 5 and the expansion of Denali Kid Care to 200% of the federal poverty level, and request that you again support it this next legislative session so that we can pass it into law. The provision of health coverage to low-income children in Alaska would help ensure access for these children to health care providers, not just to the nonprofit tribal CHCs or other CHCs that we represent, but also to the private sector physicians and other group practices. So our request for your support is not just for the benefit of our members, but really and truly for the benefit of the children of Alaska. The need for care is rising, as evidenced by over 24,000 children 18 years or younger in 2009 who were uninsured in Alaska. That's 12% of our 0 to 18 population. Nationwide, only 10% of this demographic is uninsured, so this makes Alaska a leader of uninsured children. And I share Valerie Davidson's feeling that that's embarrassing and just simply wrong. In fact, children from low-income families do not have appropriate health care access due to lack of coverage and the cost of premiums in relation to family budgets. Although most uninsured children live in a family that has at least one working parent, the average total cost of family coverage in a private group health insurance plan is now approximately $12,000 a year, and I've heard earlier this morning from Dr. Iona Farr that it was $15,000 a year. This means that for a family with moderate income whose employer contributes less than a very substantial portion of their cost of insurance, coverage may be well beyond the family's reach, even though they're working very hard. A $12,000 premium would consume more than one-fourth or 27% of the total annual income of a family of three at 250% of the federal poverty level. Additionally, parents working for firms that don't offer family coverage or who are not eligible for employer-based coverage or who are self-employed face similar challenges in providing coverage to their children. Even though Denali KidCare upper income eligibility guidelines is at 175% of the federal poverty level, the fact that 46% of Alaska's children live at or below 200% of the federal poverty level as compared to 40.6% nationwide and 39% in HRSA's Region 10, this indicates that Alaska has more children in the 175 to 200% federal poverty range per capita than most other states. Covering these children not only benefits hardworking low-income families, but also benefits society at large. As has been testified earlier today, having access to health care is also something that is not just for primary care, but also for behavioral health care services. Alaska has seen a decline of a 31% decline in the total number of children covered by private health insurance in the past decade, and the cost of caring for uninsured children is passed on to other Alaskans, to businesses raising premiums and out-of-pocket expenses for everyone. This cost to society can be captured not just in our out-of-pocket expenses that are transferred to us, but also in the decreased public health overall. For example, uninsured children are 9 times less likely to have a regular doctor, 4 times more likely to be taken to emergency rooms, and 25% more likely to miss school than uninsured children. This lack of access to primary care puts these children at increased risk for other psychosocial challenges such as educational attainment and may further exacerbate existing behavioral health challenges or be a factor in developing behavioral health problems such as increased risk for suicide, depression, substance abuse, or later criminal activity. The long-term impacts and risk factors associated with lack of access to health care for children is too costly for our society. These long-term effects impact us all, either directly or indirectly. And it's not just behavioral health issues. These children develop due to lack of access to care. Uninsured children also are over 5 times more likely to have an unmet need for medical care and over 3 times more likely not to have a needed prescription drug. The uninsured are also much less likely to receive preventive services, including immunizations, dental, and vision care. The big question we must ask ourselves, considering these sobering statistics, is will these factors impact uninsured children's ability to function in the classroom? Will they impact children's ability to function in their communities? How productive will they be without access to health care? How engaged will they be in caring for their own health or the health of others around them in their communities? How many will be seen for primary care needs at an emergency room, and thus cost the state more in the long term? How many will suffer from preventable conditions because they didn't receive appropriate care at the right time? How much more will their overall health care costs be in their lifetimes because they didn't receive needed care in their early and formative years? Rather than our having to answer these questions with disturbing responses, let's focus on the solution that will help reverse this trend. Let's increase the Denali KidCare income eligibility levels to a minimum of 200% above the federal poverty level, so that healthcare access, public health, and overall health outcomes in Alaska and for Alaska's children improve. These children go to school with us, they live in our neighborhoods, and they will grow to become the future leaders of our state if we position them for this opportunity by providing them to healthcare access. Health is a foundational building block that we all need in order to become responsible, productive, and civically engaged citizens. And we should invest in our future by investing in our children, who are our greatest resource as a state. In closing, the Alaska Primary Care supports the passage of Senate Bill 5. And I also would like to say the testimony of Sarah this morning and her child with cancer just really makes me, it sobers me and makes me realize that this passage of this bill is really one of the most pro-life things that we can do. It's saving the lives of children, and I urge you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And I want to say all in general, all of you, appreciate you coming and testifying and sharing the information with me and the members of this committee. I also would like to ask if you have written testimony that you could leave with us, that we would appreciate that. If not, it can be sent to us at a later time. Are there any legislators online at this time?
Yeah, Representative Tuck is here.
Representative Tuck, do you have a comment or a statement that you'd like to make? We still have some time, and we're going to go into some questions and answers for a short time, but I'll give you an opportunity to speak at this time if you like.
Sure. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate that. You know, I really appreciate hearing the testimony today, and to me it's obvious that the money that we spend today in prenatal and in the early lives of our children regarding health care really saves and benefits the state of Alaska down the road. And this is probably one of the best investments that we can continue making and that we should be expanding it. So I appreciate you having this hearing, and I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, thank you. And now we'll come back to the audience here. Is there anyone that's in the audience that would like to testify or make a statement? You can come in. You can sign your name in later. You can quote your name and speak.
My name is Ray Ward, and I'm public relations director for Hmong and Alaska Community.
We represent a group of newcomers to Alaska and oldcomers, encompassing primarily Laotian, Hmong, Vietnamese, Thai, Cambodian, Malaysian, Vietnamese immigrants. Many of our South Indochina residents are very new to the culture, to the language. Many are low-income families with many children. Many does not have insurance. Many do not have jobs. Those whose husbands are working are making minimum wage, and as a result cannot qualify are to meet the expenses encompassed by their children and their families that need adequate health care. I think the bill that Senator Davis is proposing is very important, and it would provide for many families to qualify to get adequate medical care and care for their children. I myself do not have children, but just to show you how the federal government guidelines on limitation on income, okay, I'm visually disabled, and I'm on Social Security disability. Now, that's at $1,500 a month. Now, that puts me $67 short of being able to qualify for food stamps or for Medicaid or for any other assistance that the state of Alaska has available. $67 short. I'm over the limit. Now, I'm just one individual, but think of all the other people who are that, you know, there are more than one person in the family, especially with children. I think it is imperative and essential that all of you legislators that are listening and all the public listening audience to get behind Senator Davis and support this bill. Write to your legislators, call them, send them emails to tell them to support this bill. So that way we can provide an opportunity for families, not only South Indochina families, but African families in general in the state of Alaska to be able to obtain proper medical health care and care for their children. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you for your testimony. It's my understanding that Elizabeth Ripley is online. Are you there, Elizabeth?
Yes, this is Elizabeth Ripley.
And you want to testify?
I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You may at this time, then.
My name is Elizabeth Ripley, and I'm the Executive Director of the Mat-Su Health Foundation in Wasilla. The Mat-Su Health Foundation's mission is to improve the health and wellness of Alaskans living in Mat-Su. And we have a goal to become the healthiest borough in the state of Alaska, and four strategies to reach this goal. One of our strategies is to reduce barriers to healthcare access, and we've spent a great deal of time and analysis to determine what those barriers are. And obviously, lack of health insurance is one of those barriers to access. Health is, in part, determined by access to primary, behavioral, and dental care and preventive services. In 2007, of the 22,991 children in Mat-Su, approximately 6.5%, or 1,499, were uninsured. However, 650 of these children fell below 200% of the federal poverty level. And ironically, the rate of uninsured children is higher the closer we get to the federal poverty level, whereas the overall uninsured rate of children in Mat-Su was 6.5%, the rate for children at or below the 200% line at the federal poverty level was 20.4% in 2007. Since Alaska has decreased the eligibility for Denali Kid Care, the rate of uninsured children within or close to the poverty level has grown each year by 1 or 2 percentage points. And Alaska has seen a 31% decline in the number of children covered by private insurance in the past decade. And it's true, a number of people have testified there is access to emergent care for these children due to federal laws such as EMTALA, but the cost of caring for uninsured children is passed on to other Alaskans and businesses, which raises premiums and out-of-pocket expenses for everyone. It's not just the cost on the payment side. As has been mentioned, uninsured children are 9 times less likely to have a regular doctor, 4 times more likely to be taken to emergency rooms, and 25% more likely to miss school than insured children. They are not as healthy as children who have regular access. Without insurance, their parents often delay care, delay going to the doctor, until the situation becomes emergent. We're all concerned with the rate of Medicaid cost growth in our state, and one way to get a handle on this is to address chronic disease and other drivers at the primary care level, to stay on top with prevention and maintenance of health. These children who are uninsured don't have this opportunity and cost the system much more on the other end. And you know, our state is looking at potentially some level of managed care for the Medicaid program, and it's my understanding they're piloting they're going to issue an RFP for the development of 4 medical homes. And one of the purposes of the medical home is to address the things that I just talked about. It's to make sure that those patients that a physician sees, that their care is truly coordinated to address chronic disease, to address prevention, and to keep those cost drivers down. And if we can't do this for our children, we're paying downstream. And I think the state, in issuing this RFP, is recognizing that we have to go upstream. We have to create new models of providing the care, and we have to address chronic disease and prevention as much as possible. And Denali Kid Care, raising that eligibility limit, will help us to, again, make sure children access those preventive measures upstream, which, if not addressed, cost us much more downstream. So, again, we at the Health Foundation strongly feel that expanding the Denali Kid Care income eligibility levels would result in improved public health and overall health outcomes throughout the state for Alaska children. And we'd like to see the state explore some other means of making sure that already eligible children are enrolled by, for instance, if their family is eligible for public assistance and other measures, that they can be automatically enrolled. Other states are doing this across the United States with great success, and that even addresses already enrolled kids. So, as has been mentioned, Alaska is in this tiny minority of states with eligibility levels this low, and the Mattsu Health Foundation advocates that we go upstream and we increase the Denali Kid Care income eligibility to at least 200% of the federal poverty level, and we will help promote Denali Kid Care and do our part to see that eligible kids are enrolled. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to you today, Senator Davis, and members of the committee.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak? If not, Mr. Sherwood, would you come back up, please? Members of the committee, are there any questions or comments that you'd like to make at this time, or any particular question that need to be addressed by Mrs. Sherwood? This is a good time to do it. Any comment from either one of you? Apparently not. They're very quiet today. I do want you back up here for a few minutes. I'm just going to say is that we do have a rally that's going to start at 12:30. We're not going to change that time, and we'll be back in here for public testimony after 1:30. The public testimony would start at that time. I asked you to come back up because I thought somebody might have a question or comment to be made or give you an opportunity to wrap up on something that might have spurred you through the testimony that was given that you might want to comment on at this time. This will be a great time to do that. And then that will give the legislators the time to go and take care of the business that they might need to take care of before we come back at 1:30. You have any comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any comments at this time. Again, if any questions did arrive, you know, from the testimony about how Medicaid or Denali Kid Care works, we'd be happy to try and address them. But I don't have any comments to make at this time.
And I'm not going to put you on the spot because you said you told us everything that you thought you could tell us. So is there anything you'd like to add at this time? And back to all of you that are here, I want to thank you for coming and testifying or listening to the testimony that has been given, and encourage you to support us at the rally at 12:30, and public testimony will begin at 1:45. At this point, we're not going to ask any other questions, or we'll just adjourn, not adjourn, but we'll recess until 1:30. Order at this time. It is now 1:15. We're supposed to do public testimony. I didn't know she had that down there. We're going to go right into the public testimony, not questions and responses at this time. Is there anyone in the audience that's going to testify for this bill? Okay, now before we take people here in Anchorage, I'm going to start off and see who's online. Is there someone from Homer online?
Yes, there is.
Are there any other LIO that have people present for testimony? I guess not at this time. Okay, Adele, person?
Yes, I'm here.
You're the person that's going to testify.
I am.
What's going to happen, I'm going to take some people here in town first, and then I'll come back to you in a few minutes, okay?
Thank you.
Do you have time to wait?
I do.
Okay, thanks. I still don't have a list in front of me, so what happened to the list? The first person to sign up on here, his first name is Daniel. And I'm not really sure how the last name is spelled, so I can't pronounce it. Dana, did you wish? Or it's Donna. Okay. Yes, you may come forward and do your testimony. State your name, who you're representing, yourself or someone else, some organization or whatever.
Thank you, Senator.
All right, thank you, Donna.
And am I right we're speaking with the committee, too, that is on by teleconference? No?
Yeah, we are being teleconference also, but yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to the whole committee. My name is Donna Graham. I'm an unashamed advocate for the wellness and wholeness of growing Alaskans. I grew up in a fairly cashless farming community with just one country physician who was always available when needed, a blessing that I took for granted. Thank you for having this forum to seek such available care for our Alaska children today. As a nurse, a parent, a grandparent, and a 50-year Alaskan, I believe assuring health maintenance and continuing good health for our children is a mandate and a calling. I'm also a member of AFACT, Anchorage Faith and Actions Together. This is the fifth year that this group has worked toward restoring the state health insurance coverage to children who used to be covered. Meanwhile, many have grown into adulthood without any such care, and many others are still waiting for help. These are children of working families, deserving citizens all. Somehow, good intentions, straight from the heart, have become embroiled in political battles and ideological intransigence. So I am right now deeply disappointed. I believe we're better than this. We know the governor vetoed the same language of this bill last year. It's AFAC's expectation that the legislature and the governor will work together to reach a mutually agreeable position that will ensure children up to 200% of poverty level. All of our representatives and senators were elected to serve the best interests of citizens. I doubt if anyone here would say that children's access to health insurance and health care is in any way controversial. By putting you into office, we trust that all of you have the understanding, the expert resources, the factual information, and the skill to design legislation that can be passed by the legislature and signed into law by the governor to interrupt this long delay for access. Alaska has the money. Do we have the will? Otherwise, one of these days, you and I will be long gone, but Alaska's children will still be uninsured. Thank you for your attention.
And thank you for your testimony. Before you leave, I just want to make a couple of comments to you, and thanks for that testimony. Would you be able to leave your written comments here?
Sure.
Okay. Also, as you mentioned, I would like to also reach a mutual bill that would be accepted by the governor, and I'm willing to do whatever I can to try to compromise and work with him, but I would like for you to pass it along to the governor himself, not just to the committee, but also to the governor, if you would write such a letter to him.
And I have, and
early
I thank
the
you.
Better.
I thank you for
right.
using the compromise word. That's wonderful.
Yes. Thank,
thank you.
You. Next person is Chris. Is there anybody by the name of Chris out there? I can't make it last name. I'm going to go off and take the person from Homer then. Homer, are you still there, Dale?
I am still here.
We are going to go ahead and let you testify this time.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Adele Person Groening. I'm speaking just for myself and on behalf of my family. I can speak unofficially for a number of my friends here in Homer, many of whom have used the Denali Kid Care program when the women were pregnant and for their children. I'll just speak to my own experience. We're a young family. I'm 34. My husband is 35. I work part-time at an art gallery here in town. My husband is self-employed. He's fished over the years. He does construction. His wages are good when he's working in the summer, but there isn't year-round work here in Homer. We have 2 children, 6 years old and just under 2, who are currently covered by Denali Kid Care. We usually fall very close to the 175% mark where Alaska currently funds, and it's terrifying to think of losing that measure of security for our family. I had a cesarean for my first daughter, and my daughter was diagnosed with hip dysplasia. She had a number of specialist appointments in Anchorage and surgery eventually. Those costs, had they not been covered by Denali Kid Care, first of all, we may have not been able or been encouraged to go for the screening and go to the specialist. And the Denali Kid Care program really encourages a family to use preventative health care services. And then secondly, if we'd had to assume those costs, we would have been, it would have bottomed out our family financially. We would not just have purchased a home and begun to pay our property taxes, begun to send our kids to school here in Homer, and really take those steps into stable middle-class life that is part of our dream of living here in Alaska. I can't speak enough about that program, how much it's meant to my family, and I just wanted to share that with you all today. Thank you.
Adele, we thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank you, Senator.
Now I'm going to continue offline here. I have offline Sarah. Sarah, are you listening?
Yes, this is Sarah Leonard.
Yes, and where are you?
I am a staff person here at Thread in Anchorage.
Okay. You want to give your testimony now?
Yes, thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Again, my name is Sarah Leonard, and I'm a staff person here at Thread, the Child Care Resource and Referral Network in Alaska. I'm calling in support of Denali Kid Care and increasing access and resources to support more women, children, and families to get the health care they need. Working with over 7,500 families annually, Thread sees how important it is for families to have the health care resources needed for their children's healthy development. And we know through recent brain research that supporting children in their youngest years is the most critical time to support that healthy development and learning. Today, more than ever before, families are experiencing economic challenges like finding jobs and childcare and having to make tough financial choices for their family. Alaska's families need to have access to healthcare resources during these times for the future success of their children, our youngest Alaskans. Thread strongly supports increasing Denali Kid Care to the 200% rate. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll come back to Anchorage now. Paige Hudson.
Good morning. My name is Paige Hodson. I am speaking as a mom, and I'm also speaking as a domestic violence advocate on a grassroots basis. I have a small organization called Alaska Moms for Custodial Justice, and these are a group of women that have had custody challenges from abusive fathers and are trying very hard to get back on their feet after exiting a relationship involving children with domestic violence. So I'm speaking on that part as well in a state where we have such a high incidence of it, and in fact we just received new crime victimization studies out of UAA showing about 50% of women in Anchorage have been victimized at some point in their lifetime. It's incredibly important to make sure that we can help women out of poverty to get out of those situations and to be able to take care of the children that are products of those relationships as well. When I was in Juneau a couple years ago, I heard testimony, I believe, to this committee from an expert that talked about the link between manipulation of birth control and the incidence, high-risk incidence of additional domestic violence and more lethal domestic violence when women are pregnant. And, of course, younger children are at higher risk as well in those situations. So we need to have as many people covered so that they can get good preventative care so that maybe they can get help out of those situations when they can by talking to their doctors about what's involved and helping the children that are involved as well. So I just think it's incredibly important that we don't be short-sighted about trying to save money here and there, or that we let ideology get in the way of really protecting our families and those vulnerable populations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleen Nurdin.
Yes, my name is Colleen Nurdin, and I'm here representing, number one, myself as a citizen of Alaska over 30 years, as well as a father, as well as a person who works professionally with a nonprofit organization that offers direct service to many of the citizens that are being left out of appropriate health care. I'm also here representing on a spiritual and moral level as an outreach minister for the Alaska Center for Spiritual Living. And I simply want to state very clearly that I am absolutely in support of increasing the level of participation of Alaskan citizens in the Denali Kid Care for the quality of life that all citizens deserve to have. At every level, whether we speak simply as a citizen of Alaska, morally as a moral citizen of the country, as well as a social economic investment, is only very common sense that investing in one's wellness and wholeness up front is like a leveraged investment to avoid the massive care that we're all going to pay for one way or another in the future. So I would suggest that by us providing Denali Kid Care to a greater part of our population, our citizens, we're actually making a not only a financial but a moral and social investment in our future of our children and women and for healthy families. So I would like to absolutely encourage everyone to support this bill on every level. Number one, for we know that for Alaska to continue to be a prosperous state and for us to continue to keep people and families as number one, then health care is the number one thing that we should all be concerned about. Matter of fact, it's the very founding values of our country, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Health care supports us making sure that we all have opportunity for high quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Farrah Jane Lanston? Farrah Jane?
Thank you, Senator Davis. It's nice to be here. I did not plan to speak, but since my name appeared on your list and there seemed to be an opportunity, I stepped forward to speak highly of the program of Denali Kid Care. I am not a parent, but I have many people around me in my church and in other associations and have known firsthand how much this Denali Kid Care program has meant to young families. And if there's an opportunity just to say, I support it wholeheartedly, I support the raising and the increasing of enrollments to whatever level is possible, I highly would support that as a citizen of the state and of this community. Thank you very much, Senator Davis.
Thank you for your testimony. We're going to go offline now. Is there a Robert Boyle there?
Robert Boyle speaking.
You may testify at this time.
I would like to.
Yes. Okay.
My name is Robert Boyle. I'm superintendent, Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District, Ketchikan Borough. The reason I want to speak about the Denali Kids Care has to do with our school district and the requirements from NCLB. As you know, those requirements require all students to be academically successful. And there is a group of students within our school district which are the economically disadvantaged. That is the single target area within our district that we're unable to reach well with our programs, and they are the first in our communities and in our school districts and otherwise across our state that are usually the first to get cut. They don't have a strong lobbyist, and so when it comes time for reducing, minimizing, or forgetting the services that they need without that strong voice, they get left behind. That's proven out statistically by the academic scores of kids within the schools. So in our efforts to move forward with NCLB, have all children moving forward, no child left behind, we urge continuation of the NALA Kid Care.
That completes your testimony?
Yes.
Thank you very much. We'll come back to anchors now. Phyllis Morrell. Oh, you're not. So the sheet that I have is just it names on it. It doesn't say where you testified or not. It's not the sheet that I should have in front of me. Is there anybody out there going to sign up to testify that's present in the room? Come forward. We'll get your name written down later. Is there anyone else in the audience out there that has not signed that want to testify? We'll have a sign-in. Just take one of these back there and let them sign in.
Nick,
was this no yes or no on this one? This just got names on it. There's no way to say yes or no. Yes.
All right, well, thanks for holding this hearing. I'm here today to support SB 5, the Denali expansion of Denali Kid Care. I think it's a very important program. My mom uses this program in Omaha, Nebraska to help raise my two sisters. And, you know, she works 12 to 14-hour days, and she's still forced to be on food stamps. And I think that in terms of economic opportunity, that we need this kind of program to really help, you know, equal access to economic opportunity. A family shouldn't decide between health care and food costs, and a family shouldn't have to decide between rent and health costs or have to worry about being bankrupt just because of their children getting sick. So thank you for holding this hearing. I'm in fully support of SB 5.
Okay, I appreciate your testimony, and I'd like for you to state your name prior to going back to your seat.
Yep, Nick Moe, M-O-E.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any, there was one other hand that wanted to testify. I don't have the sheet in front of me yet.
My name is Debbie Thompson. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Nurses Association, and I am here to support Senate Bill 5. I find that it is very important that we look at our most vulnerable population, support them in their day-to-day health and their ability to learn and to continue on and become productive citizens. I would like to thank you for holding this hearing so that you could have the testimony. I won't repeat all of the things that you have heard already this afternoon, but I just wanted you to know that it is very important and you are supported in doing this and increasing it more than the 75% if we can get it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else present that wants to testify? Is there anyone online that has not signed up that I don't know of yet? At this time, I'm going to ask Mr. Sherwood to come forward. We don't have anybody present right now for testimony. We're still open for testimony, but we're going to leave this topic and talk directly to Mr. Sherwood at this time. Thank you for coming back, Mr. Sherwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, it's John Sherwood with the Department of Health and Social Services.
All right. I think this is a good opportunity. I have a few questions that I would like to have answered, and I will take the time to ask those questions at this time. The one thing that I want to ask is if abortion-related services must be provided as a part of the pregnancy service in Denali Kid Care each year, how many services are actual abortions,
or other services. Do you have a breakdown on that? And could it be provided to us?
Madam Chair, we have provided the information on the number of recipients receiving abortion-related services. To be clear, that excludes other kinds of terminations of pregnancies like miscarriage, stillbirth. Those numbers aren't included. As to a breakout of the actual number of abortions, I don't have that information today. Claims for services come in over time. They don't all come at once, so you get some claims for some of the preliminary services sooner. Providers have up to a year to bill. And so I can't say definitively that that number equates to an equal number of abortions.
I guess to go a step further, there's one other thing I'm not really sure if I understand it correctly. But it's my understanding that you're saying all abortions, regardless of what the situation might be, are charged to the state, and the state pays for it 100%. Even though you might be able to get some money back from the federal government in those three categories that they recognize. Why do we not present that bill to the federal government for reimbursement?
Currently, to be eligible for reimbursement from the federal government, as you noted, there are three exceptions to the prohibition against funding abortion, cases of rape, incest, and life of the mother. For us to claim that, we have to get documentation from the physicians performing the services that the individual meets that criteria. We haven't gotten that documentation as in the past. It just hasn't come in. We are required to pay either way under the Alaska case law. So we aren't getting those forms that certify that they're eligible for the federal funds.
But the forms would be provided by the department, right? The division would.
That's correct. It's a form that we would provide.
And why do we not provide them?
Well, we make the form available. I think the question may be, do we require an affirmative statement that it doesn't meet the criteria? And at this point, we don't. We are looking at making that change, but we have not yet changed our regulations to do so.
So that's one thing that might be able to be considered in some changes then.
Yes.
And the next question I have, if I'd say less than 1% of the money comes from the Denali KidCare portion of the money. Abortion costs the state less than 1% of the Denali KidCare budget. Is that true? Less than 1% of their budget?
Just a minute. I don't have that explicit statistic. I'm looking at some of my numbers to see mm-hmm. if I can figure that out.
Take your time.
Based on the numbers we provided, it would be less than 1% of the total Denali KidCare budget would have gone to abortions in calendar year 10.
And what would that equate in dollars?
It was $343,000.
Okay. And if we bring on this approximately 300 pregnant women and 1,300 children into the program at this time, that would be probably about 14% increase in it. what would that make that amount raise? You said 350-some thousand versus the new group coming on. How much you anticipate would be added onto that with that number?
Madam Chair, we've never estimated the number that would be expenditures on abortions. We've used kind of a higher level estimation technique where we look at our total spending and our average federal match and apply that to the expected number of individuals going on. So we don't have a dollar figure attached to abortions for the projection of the expansion.
And I know that you have told us this many times, but could you tell me what the total budget amount is for the Denali Kids portion, the kid care portion of the bill, of the services that we provide?
In calendar year 10, we spent $238 million on Denali Kid Care enrolled recipients.
Okay, versus that amount of money that you said is being paid for abortion. That's just a small percentage there. And it must be some way that we could work out some way of saying, make that be known, because the service is great out there. We need the service. We need to have the kids covered. They need preventive care. They need all these things that would save us money in the long run. But yet we hold the cost, the numbers down to 175% because we don't want to add one other person on the abortion list. And what I want to know, are we transferring over into Denali Kid Care that those that qualify under Medicaid, straight Medicaid, into the Kid Care if it's an abortion? Is it coming out of that pool of money?
Madam Chair, it is not. We actually don't budget Denali Kid Care separately, so that number I gave you of $238 million, that is just what we happen to spend in calendar year 10 on people who had those eligibility categories. If a woman is on Medicaid and pregnant and seeks an abortion service and she's not in one of the Denali Kid Care categories, we don't do anything to her eligibility that would move her into Denali Kid Care. So we're not doing anything to load that expense or cost into Denali Kid Care.
Okay, and you did make the point that did not include, and when you're talking about service, other services, you're saying you're leaving out the category of miscarriages and all those other categories. But I'd like to know what is included in there other than, you said other services. What other services are we adding into that number?
Madam Chair, I'm not the clinician, so I hate to try and give too definitive an answer, but there are preliminary visits, there may be lab tests, there may be follow-up work. We use a procedure where we look at the diagnosis codes and procedure codes, and in some cases we actually request the medical records to determine whether or not we believe this is abortion-related, and therefore we should not claim the federal funds. So it's more than simply the procedure. The way we bill fee-for-service, it isn't always in a single package. There's multiple procedure codes that may get billed as part of that service. So, and again, I'm not the clinician, so exactly where they draw the line, I can't speak to.
The other question that I'd like to ask at this time, could you tell me if in the state monies, any of those abortions are being paid out of general funds at the state level?
For abortion services, we do not claim any federal funds, so that would all come out of our general fund appropriation. I think, you know, we have a couple sources of that appropriation, but yeah, it's general fund money.
Okay. At this time, we do have someone else that want to testify, but I'm going to ask if there are other questions that I need to ask. I'll have you come back
later. Did you have a comment to make or ask the question, Johnny? I'm sorry, Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Sherwood, several of us were there on those dark days when Governor Murkowski was trying to roll back Denali Kid Care with his allies in the legislature who, for budget reasons, but more for philosophical reasons, I suppose, said that they opposed it and needed to roll it back from 200% to 175%. They were very, happy to do that or very committed to doing that. Have you, I doubt that you have, but I just wanted to ask the question if the department had tracked or quantified in any way the people, because when the rollback happened, my understanding is that women and children were actually thrown off of the program. People who had been eligible for Denali Kid Care at 200% of the federal poverty level, when it was reduced to 175, people actually lost service, a significant number of people. Do you remember how many people that was roughly? I won't hold you to a number. But my main question is, did the department track or quantify health outcomes for any of those women and children that were thrown out of the program at that time?
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, I think the approximate number of people we lost is kind of reflected by the estimate of the number of people we expect to come back on with we project to come back on with SB 5. I do not believe we actually did specific tracking of those individuals. They didn't all leave overnight because for both pregnant women who remain pregnant through the duration of their pregnancy or children who at that time remained eligible for a 6-month period of time, those periods didn't all hit, you know, at once, so they left over a period of time. Of course, some individuals did end up coming back onto the program as we do have people who come and go whose income changes. But I'm not aware or I don't recall any tracking of the health outcomes of that. So,
yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I doubted that there had been any tracking, but, excuse me, and I knew people had gone off the program. I suppose there were people, and do you remember, did people just get a phone call or a letter from Governor Murkowski saying you're no longer eligible or you're dismissed from the program? How did that work? How did people find out that they were eliminated from eligibility by that action?
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, I don't recall all of the informational activities we did, but the standard process is that when your period of eligibility comes up, when the 6-month continuous eligibility or when the pregnancy and postpartum coverage period ends, you get a standard notice if you are redetermined no longer to meet the income eligibility requirements, telling you that you are going to be, your period of eligibility is going to come to an end, and you we explain the reason and the authority, and we give the people their appeal rights if they believe we're factually in error or we're applying policy wrong. So they get it kind of a standard letter. It's generated by the Division of Public Assistance that tells them what's going on with their case. And at the end of their period, if they're determined eligible, they get a letter that tells them it's going to continue. If they're determined not eligible, they get the letter telling them that their coverage is going to terminate and gives them the date and such.
So not signed by the governor. The dividend checks, you don't have Sean Parnell's name on there, and I guess back then Frank Murkowski's names were on our dividend checks, but probably not the termination of eligibility for Denali Kid Care.
To the chair, Senator Ellis, I honestly don't remember whether we sent out a separate letter, separate from the notice, informing people about the change in policy, and if we did, who signed that letter. But the standard notice letter is signed by their caseworker. It's it's not manually signed, but it comes from their case, their public assistance caseworker, not from the governor.
And you mentioned some of the people that were eligible, and then after the action occurred, some of those people might have become eligible in the future, probably because their health costs caught up with them and they were pauperized or became poor enough to then qualify under the 175% of poverty. If they had health problems, they probably had bills that may have bankrupted them or made them poorer, and then so maybe some of those folks then were income eligible for Denali KidCare at the 175 level. Is it reasonable to think that, that some of that happened for some people?
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, that's certainly a possibility. If you lack health care and it impacts your ability to work as much, your income could change. I would say that generally our experience with people with incomes at this level is there is a significant amount of variation in terms of the hours they work, job changes, for a variety of reasons, their income may go up and down. So we do see people move through the different ranges of income, even within the eligible population, but also we see people move in, on and off the program as their income changes.
And your testimony today, then, is that it's the same number or approximately the same number of people that were off the program back then during the Murkowski days. That's the same number that would come onto the program here in 2011 or 2012 if the bill were to be passed and signed into law at 200% of poverty.
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, my recommendation is when we develop the projection about what the impact of increasing this by the income level by 25% of the federal poverty level, if you will, we looked at what the impact was of the reduction when we did do the reduction to 25% from 200 to 75. So basically, we've sort of carried on those same kinds of assumptions and experience, you know, both ways. So I didn't actually develop the number personally, but that's my recollection of the explanation.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. I was just going back and thinking, this program passed in 97. It probably went into effect in 98. So anyway, in between 13 and 14 years, we've had this program. And then Governor Murkowski was successful in coming back and lowering the requirement to 175 from the 200% above poverty level that it was. He froze it there because you wasn't adding any, you weren't thinking about inflation or anything else. It eroded really to 150 something, if I remember, 156 or whatever it was at the time that the bill that I introduced to bring it back to 200%, at that time that had eroded to 156. The bill was not able to be passed in both houses with it at 200%. And we compromised on 175, and we've been there for the last 5 years on this number. Two times now we've come back with the 200%. First time not successful. Last year we were successful, and we have the bill out there again. All that time we had people being dropped off of that program. Not well, they had to be dropped if it was at 175 and they didn't qualify. Those people dropped out off of the roll, didn't they? We didn't continue to carry them.
Madam Chair, when we did reduce to 175, we certainly lost people, but because the people had periods of eligibility that were based on, you know, six months that were based on whenever we made that previous determination, we would that period of eligibility continued, and they were only dropped at redetermination. So yes, we did drop people, and since that 175 went into effect, we did not authorize new people with income above that level. You know, just right. To be clear.
I understand that.
So.
Thank you.
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 Thank you. We do have someone to testify at this time. If you just want to keep your seat there, you may do that for the time being. I don't know where you are, but is Heather?
Yes, hello.
Would you want to state your name and give your testimony?
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Senators and everyone there. My name is Heather McCausland. I live in Wasilla, and I applied for Denali Kid Care for my son last year. I've been on unemployment for 9 months, and then I got a job which was part-time for 1,000 hours a year. I ended up working a lot of hours, pretty much full-time the first 2 months of that position, but it was a limited 1,000-hour year. When I applied for Denali Kid Care, I made $150 too much. So I'm just asking that you look at funding this program. 45 other states already do fund these programs to the 200% level. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Is there anybody else online to testify? No. I think it's time. Thank you. We're back here in Anchorage now, and we have no one in the audience that wants to testify. We've completed our list. We are open till 4 o'clock, but I think we're going to adjourn before that. But since we do have Mr. Sherwood up front here, I wanted to know if he had any closing statements that he wanted to make or anything that he wanted to suggest to us that we might do to come up with this compromise situation for this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not at this time. As you're aware, we continue to evaluate various suggestions that have come up. But I think it's fair to say we're still in the evaluation process, and I'm not in a position to really say much more.
Okay. Appreciate that. And we thank you for being here today. I think there's one other person that said they want to testify, Garen. You want to come forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Garen Tarr. I was going to just keep silent today. I appreciate you having the hearing and the opportunity to listen to folks, but I did want to make a point of clarification from some of the previous comments by Mr. Sherwood. When the program was rolled back to 175%, income levels were, in fact, frozen at the 2003 levels. So we did, in fact, lose individuals each year up until we unfroze the income levels in 2007. So his estimation, I believe, is incorrect, that the number of individuals that would be covered under moving up to 200% is the same as the number of individuals that were lost. If memory serves me, while working in the legislature during that time, it was almost double that number of individuals who lost coverage when the change was made to both roll it back to 175% and freeze the income levels at 2003 levels. So a number of individuals immediately lost coverage through that policy change, but then in 2004 lost coverage because income levels were froze, 2005, 2006, and 2007. So I think our number of individuals is actually closer to double that, and I just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Appreciate you making that point, and then we could give Mr. Sherwood a time to get the actual figures, and he can report back to us, and I thank you for bringing that to our attention. Is there anyone else to testify? Having no other people sign up or in the – well, you may come forward. I'm sorry I didn't see your hand.
I'm Debbie Thompson. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Nurses Association. It's kind of a personal question because I myself had a miscarriage. That miscarriage was counted as an abortion because of the coding in medical terms. And I'm not – it's probably for Mr. Sherwood to answer, but I'm not quite clear that how they do their coding and go through that coding would really – say if it was an elective procedure and if it wasn't called a missed AB but an abortion because of the number of weeks along you are, that those still couldn't be mixed in with abortion.
Would you want to address that, Mr. Sherwood?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, with the qualification that I am not a clinician, so I don't work in the codes, and I have had conversations with our clinicians. My understanding as we look at the combination of procedure codes and diagnosis codes, and we are looking for the diagnosis code, there are procedure codes that might indicate either way. We're looking at the diagnosis codes that indicate it's a voluntary termination of a pregnancy, and when we're in doubt based on the information we see, we request medical records. There's always the potential for something to be incorrectly coded, that may happens throughout our program where, for whatever reason, an incorrect code is entered. My discussion with the clinicians is that they feel pretty comfortable that they are not including the sort of other non-voluntary terminations of pregnancy, that their process for evaluating those codes is pretty accurate. Now, again, I'm not prepared to engage in a debate with anybody about the potential for how something could get coded and perceived be the other way, but it's not a simple one. Is this say abortion or miscarriage? It's really also looking at the diagnosis codes and, if necessary, the medical records that go with it. So,
I thank you for bringing that to our attention, and if there's other information that you may provide to us to clarify that, I'd appreciate it. Okay. The other thing that I'd like to say at this time, and the question and the thoughts that's in my mind. We have to pay for all those abortions. We do it under the Hyde Amendment, and we do it because our law takes us even above that we have to pay for those services. But what I want to know, is it possible that any of those services that's going to be paid for, could they be switched from the NALI KidCare program over into the regular Medicaid program and paid out of that pot of money?
Madam Chair, for budget purposes, it's all one pot of money. We have a single pot we have a single appropriation for the Medicaid program, and we don't distinguish between whether somebody is eligible through one of the Denali KidCare categories or eligible through one of the other Medicaid categories when we pay the bills. We pay them all out of a single pot of money. I'm not the budget expert. Is it possible to set up other budget structures? It may be, but that's kind of a question of how the choice is made to structure our budget. As to the practical matter, if someone is eligible for pregnancy services through the Medicaid program, the case law does dictate that they're offered coverage of the abortion services. You can put the money someplace else, but in terms of changing any access to service, you're not going to be addressing the access issue.
And actually, I wasn't trying to address the access issue. Enter into the program. I'm concerned that the NALI KidCare has this stigma out there saying, this is how much money is coming out of your budget for abortions. And so if you come up with another percentage and go up to 200%, that means more abortions to you. And that's why I asked the question, could they be shipped into shipped over to the Medicaid regular program? I know it's all the same money, this one pot of money. But you do have so much money that's geared towards the NALI KidCare.
Madam Chair, again, we don't actually have an allocation. When we provide numbers on the NALI KidCare expenditures, we're looking after the fact to see how much of the money we spent turned out to be somebody who was on the NALI KidCare. So, prior to 1998, we had, there was a separate program that existed, and we had all the money for abortions get paid through that program. But
what was the program?
That was the General Relief Medical Program.
Oh yeah, that went away. That went
so,
away.
But that went away, and so it's if you know, I think we would end up coming up with the same answers to the question, regardless of how we tried to structure the budget or do the money. I can't think of how that would really change the outcome, since we don't account for it separately right now.
Okay. You had a comment?
I do. And the reason I was asking my questions is not me personally. I had personal insurance when I had my miscarriage. I lost a set of triplets, and I personally had to argue with my insurance company for coverage because the diagnosis was an AB. It wasn't a missed AB because I was too far along. It was an AB. And so I spent a lot of time talking and had to ultimately get an attorney to say that it should be covered because I was doing everything by my medical records to save that pregnancy. So that's why I still have a little bit of angst that everything is really, truly ABs in this money. Even though it's small, it's less than 1%. I'm concerned that the criteria that's set up to go through doesn't really capture just because of medical definitions.
Great. Thanks for your comments. Appreciate that. And we do have one other person that's phoned in to testify. That's online to testify. Adrian, are you there?
Yes.
Would you like to testify?
Yes.
Can you state your name for the record?
For the record, my name is Adrian Lecornu. Last name is spelled L-E-C-O-R-N-U. Vice President at Alaska Federation of Natives.
Okay.
And I'm just a quick statement. We at Alaska Federation of Natives are in support of this bill, SB-5. And would like to engage further when the session comes around.
All right. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else waiting to testify? At this time, then, since we have no one else online or in the audience here, we are going to adjourn this hearing. And I want to take this opportunity to thank you. There, I see two hands suddenly went up in the air. Are you here to testify? Apparently, we're having some confusion about it. I thought there was a sign-in sheet that would be passed along to me, but if you would just come up, and we're glad to have you. Definitely want to hear your testimony. State your name for the record.
My name is Holly Ryan. I'm a senior at Alaska Pacific University, and I'm a psychology major. And so throughout both my schoolwork, my work in a medical office, and my practicum, I've heard a lot of just really heartbreaking stories about women and families who don't have coverage because of small amounts of money, you know, $200, $150, really negligible amounts of money. And I just wanted to just, you know, speak my piece and just say from everything that I've heard, I wholeheartedly support this increase to 200%, and I just think it's something that we really need as Alaskans and as women, just to give to everyone that we can.
Thank you for your testimony. And there was one other person? No? No, I thought I saw two steps back there. If that's not, I'll continue with my closing remarks and ask Senator if he has any closing remarks to make, and we're going to adjourn at that time. I just appreciate the fact that you did come out this afternoon. This has been a great day for us. Starting off at 9:15 this morning, going until now, even with the small gathering that we had at noontime to rally in favor of the Atlanta Kid Care Bill, Senate Bill 5. It's been very helpful to hear many of your compelling stories, and I hope you will continue to help us pass the word about the passage of this bill and the importance of passing this bill.
And at this time, we're going to turn it over to Senator Ellis to see if he has a closing statement to make.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to express my appreciation to you for holding this hearing. We've been in the trenches for Denali Kid Care since the beginning, since the creation, and trying to sustain it and improve it over time. I guess I would say to any advocates for Denali Kid Care who are listening, and there's some here in the room and others around the state, that you really will have to get involved if you want this bill to pass. The people that are trying to kill this bill are very active. They make phone calls, they send emails, they lobby the governor, they lobby their legislators, and I suspect those of you in the room have done your share of lobbying legislators, but more people are going to have to speak out for Senator Davis's bill to pass, because the people that oppose Denali Kid Care, and there are a lot of them, it's a shocking number of people that are working to kill Denali Kid Care or to roll it back or to keep it from improving. Those people are very active, and you're going to have to be just as active if you hope to prevail. So let's not kid ourselves that everybody in the state supports Denali Kid Care. I think too many people on our side, Senator Davis's side, took it for granted that Senator Davis's bill would pass and be signed into law, or at least allowed to become law without the governor's signature. People were very hopeful. People prayed about it. But enough groundwork was not done to overcome the people that really don't believe the same way those of you who have testified in favor of Denali Kid Care believe. There are people with very different philosophies who are out to stop this bill and convince the governor to maintain his veto position. So there's a lot of prayer and a lot of work yet to come if we're to prevail. It's up to you.
Thank you, Senator. And before we actually adjourn, I just want to recognize my staff. I know all of you have met them. I'd like for them to stand. So you, if you don't know who they are, would my staff members stand up, please? And I want to take this opportunity to thank for the work that they've put into this hearing. And at this point, we're going to adjourn.